disease, it will become a major problem. Nearly 3,000 homes have been destroyed. More than 15,000 homes are badly damaged. The infrastructure that binds a community together, the health centres, the schools, the early childhood development centres, many of those have been badly affected. So the fabric of the community is torn, if you like. When we were visiting the flood-affected areas, the government was struggling to get a sense of how bad the situation was, because many of their workers were badly affected as well, had lost their houses. And when we were there 7 days after the flood, there was no electricity, so they couldn't actually contact many of their workers. So they're pulling information together and getting a sense of the scale of it has been tremendously difficult. But it's 15 districts affected out of 25. And sadly for Sri Lanka, the other 10 districts are still affected by a drought, which has been, which is kind of the irony. And hundreds of thousands of people are at risk because of the drought situation in the north and the east.
So while there's that happening in the north and the east, as you say, in the south and for many of these districts, they can expect a lot more rain and a lot more standing water and a lot more dengue, which is endemic.
Yes, the dengue will become a big problem. Already there's been 53,000 cases of dengue in Sri Lanka this year. That will spiral now. The water has been standing for weeks now. Some areas won't drain yet for another 4 or 5 days. So that breeding ground is huge. Vector control it needs to be ramped up, which is killing mosquitoes basically, but it's going to be a huge strain on the health services to deal with those cases. Similarly, in terms of waterborne diseases, diarrhea, etc., getting safe water to these people that are affected is a huge challenge.
So can we just maybe take a step back and refer back to the tsunami in 2004? You know, in your opinion, how long did it take the country really to get back on its feet? And how long should we expect the country to take to get back on its feet now?
Well, I wasn't there for the tsunami. But I know that the government is calling a meeting today of development partners at the Prime Minister's office, and they're talking about a 6 to 12 month plan to rehabilitate the area. So it will take at least another 6 to 12 months to get things working again. But the impact of these types of things on children and their families can go on for years and years and years.
And what kind of landscape are we looking at now? Many buildings are not made of concrete, so what is the next step? How is disaster relief and resilience kicking in now?
Well, that's one of the things the government has acknowledged, is that building codes have not been enforced, which is why many of these houses have been destroyed. They've been built in areas that they shouldn't have been built in, and the government has recognised that. So there's a lot to be done, but you know, it's difficult to look at a family and say, well, you built your house in the wrong place, you know, and I'm sorry, you know. these people, their families, their livelihoods are in that area. They're badly affected. We need to help them now.
Absolutely. It's nobody's fault, of course. And what does UNICEF need in terms of support from the international community?
Well, we're looking for, in simple terms, $3.5 million. We have raised probably about half of that, and we need more money to be dealing with some of the immediate things, such as water and sanitation. But a lot of support will be needed to develop, to help rehabilitate the education system, to help rehabilitate and strengthen the health system, and most importantly, to be strengthening child protection measures. Many children are particularly vulnerable, with 22,000 people still living in emergency shelters in very tough conditions. The protection needs of children, the psychosocial impact, you know, we need to be doing a lot to help the most vulnerable.
Tim Sutton from UNICEF, many thanks.
Thank you.